Sorry, boss, but there's only two men I trust. One of them's me, the other's not you. Welcome to Couch Potato Theater here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Couch Potato Theater is the podcast here where we love to celebrate all of everyone's favorite movies, cult classics, guilty pleasures, box office hits. I'm Kevin Garland Green, a.k.a. the Marietta Mangler, your host for this special Couch Potato Theater. Here at the Fandom Podcast Network, we are proud to celebrate Con Air 1997. And I'd like to introduce my co-host and fellow cons for this Couch Potato Theater, my guest host, Kyle the Virus Wagner.
And I passed no psychological evaluation before I got on this podcast.
Well, that was kind of required, so yeah, good job. But we also have a special guest. Welcome back to the Fandom Podcast Network, Matt Diamond Dog Clifton.
I like to think of myself as the poster child for the criminally insane.
Nice. We got the perfect cast here. Thank you for joining us. Before we move on, let's tell the listeners where they can find the Fandom Podcast Network and Couch Potato Theater. And Kyle the Virus Wagner, do you mind?
My plan to take over the plane and get out of this joint is all starting on the Fandom Podcast Network's homepage at fpnet.podbean.com. And of course, if you want to get that on your mobile device, you can also download the Podbean app and search for Fandom Podcast Network. It's also available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play for you Android device users, Spotify, and of course, iHeartRadio. Of course, you can visit the Fandom Podcast Network page to get more news on this Con Air podcast, as well as many other things going on in fandom. You can send all of our prism mail to fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com, or you can follow us in the prison library, otherwise known as Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network, or on Twitter at FanPod Network. Mr. Mangler, what prison block can people find you at?
You can find me on the prison block Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix.
Of course, you can find me, Mr. Virus, on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Mr. Diamond Dog, Mr. Dog, if you will, where can people find you? What prison block are you on these days?
Instagram, Twitter, unfortunately, at Florida Fulcrum, just all together, just like that. And if you want to follow me, you can. So there.
He really doesn't need followers. He's pretty scary on his own, so... But, you know, there are other ways you can help us with our master plan to get out of this prison. You can go to the TeePublic store at teepublic.com and get all the great gear of the Fandom Podcast Network, much like the Couch Potato Theater shirt that Mr. Mangler is wearing over there.
Looks mighty fine on me.
Yeah, it looks quite well, considering it's modern prison gear.
Yes, it's true.
But you can also find escape keys, laptop covers. If you need to cover the bars of your cell, they sell great tapestries as well. So just go to teepublic.com, search for the Fandom Podcast Network. And of course, we love your reviews. I have a feeling this might be a 1-star podcast by the time it's all said and done. But we love those 5-star reviews, but we love the feedback in general because, you know, we might brainstorm us some ideas to get out of this place that much quicker. But because this place likes to apparently make podcasts to feed your ears, whatever that means. But, Mr. Mangler, you have a plan for us today.
We've taken the plane, man. We've taken the plane. Welcome, everyone, to Couch Potato Theater special presentation of the 1997 action thriller classic Con Air. Cameron Poe, a highly decorated United States Army Ranger, came home to Alabama to his wife, Trisha, only to run into a few drunken regulars where Trisha works. Cameron unknowingly kills one of the drunks and is sent to federal penitentiary for involuntary manslaughter for 7 years. Cameron becomes eligible for parole and now can go home to his wife and daughter. Unfortunately, Cameron has to share a prison airplane with some of the country's most dangerous criminals who took control of the plane and are now planning to escape the country. Cameron has to find a way to stop them while playing along. Meanwhile, United States Marshal Vincent Larkin is trying to help Cameron get free to stop the criminals, including Cyrus the Virus Grissom. Now, I thought, Kyle, the virus, why don't you help us here with some of our taglines? Why don't you go first?
As always, one wrong flight can ruin your whole day.
A Jerry Bruckheimer production. Buckle up, June 6th.
Get ready to fly.
Buckle up. We're on deadly ground. Now they have got wings. Welcome to Con Air. I think I got a face palm there from Diamond Dog Matthew Clifton. All right, let's talk about the theatrical posters here, guys, of course, and the DVD art. You know, we've got, of course, the three main stars that were highlighted, of course, were Nicolas Cage, John Cusack, and John Malkovich on the Con Air poster there. And then there's one that kind of shows all of them there with the mug shots of them near the top there. Pretty cool. You got a favorite of those, Matt?
Let me see. Probably be in the mugshots, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Yeah, it'd be, let's see. Is that Swamp Thing all the way to the right?
Yeah, it is. Look at that mustache.
God, love Swamp Thing. And Pinball, and then,
Danny Trejo. Yep.
Danny Trejo. Yeah.
This movie has been Trejo'd.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Matt is voting for the mugshot poster. I actually like the three-headed poster.
The three-headed one. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that was the one they used mainly for the movie poster, and I think that was the original VHS DVD cover.
Yeah, that's also on the Blu-ray as well. Yeah, and also the laser disc, baby. Yeah, I'm rocking the laser disc right now. Watch that.
It wouldn't
today.
Be a podcast if Kevin wasn't rocking a laser disc.
I know, right? Yeah. Well, let's talk about the first time we saw this movie. Where were you? What kind of an impact did it have on you? Matt, as our returning guest here, man, tell us, when was the first time and where did you see Con Air?
You know, I missed a lot of these movies in the theaters. And it was, you know, saw it on VHS and I just remember it was like, oh, Nicolas Cage is in this. This looks like fun.
Were you a Nicolas Cage fan? Is that why?
I think so. And I remember the commercials and all that, and that theme song being blared over the commercials. Bow, now, now. I mean, everybody remembers that, right? Everybody remembers that. Or the you get to the commercials and they start off with like it showed the inmates, Billy Bedlam and Diamond Dog, Cyrus the Virus, and all that. And then Nicolas Cage comes out with his awesome hair in that shot where he's just like...
Yeah, the wind's blowing through his mind.
The wind's blowing. You can always... Okay, so you can always tell how much fun you're going to have with the Nicolas Cage movie by how awesome his hairpiece is.
This is true.
It's a fact.
This is true.
And he's just rocking that mullet. So... Yeah, I saw this on VHS, and I just remember that it's a great, fun, awesome action movie. I mean, it's honestly, it's one of the best action movie of the 90s, I think, that's out there. I mean, it's just such a guilty pleasure. It's so much fun, right?
This is true, yes. Yeah, no, I agree. I'm going to ask you a follow-up question on that in a second, but I want to get Kyle's first response. When and where did you first see this? What was your response?
I actually saw this in the theater. It was kind of after it had been out for a few weeks, and I finally kind of said, okay, let me go check this out. I had a free evening. And it's one of those movies that is just fun. And it's like, you look at this, it's a pretty good all-star cast, and then there's John Malkovich. And you're like, one of these things doesn't belong. But Malkovich chews it up so good in this movie. And, you know, it's to me, I think... This was part of a really good cage run of action films in this segment of the 90s. Because this is about the same time in that run you had The Rock and a few other of the cage kind of like action popcorn films. And it was a really good run for Nick Cage at this point.
This is true. He was in his stride right now. I saw this in the theater, loved it. I think I went back and saw it a couple more times. Got it on VHS, of course, then DVD, then Blu-ray. Then Laserdisc.
Can I say something real quick?
Yeah, Kevin? Go for it. What's up?
Okay. I like to... I tell everybody, Con Air is what Michael Bay movies should be. It's all the explosions, all the action, without the stupid dialogue, without the product placement, without the gaudy camera angles and the camera shots and all that, this is what Michael Bay wishes his movies were.
A Simon West film, yes. I'm the Bay apologist, but Kyle, Matt is not a fan of Michael Bay for good reason. I understand. I could definitely see your point there, but it's funny about Simon West doing this. I didn't really know much about him, but obviously this is probably one of his finding achievements. I want to ask you guys real something. Kyle, you brought it up, and I want to check with you on this, Matt. Con Air versus The Rock. A lot of people like to put these head to head. First of all, because they both star Nicolas Cage, they're both fun films. But which one do you prefer?
Me?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm asking you, Matt.
Okay, I'm going to get a lot of hate for this, but unfortunately, I prefer this movie over The Rock. I can't watch The Rock anymore. I can't watch any Michael Bay movies anymore because everything I hate about his movies is just so in my face and glaring to me that it gets under my skin. Nicolas Cage's dialogue in The Rock is absolutely horrendous. Be careful, I might drop him. You will not. And I'm not exaggerating. He says it just like that. Or, how in the name of Zeus's butthole did you get out of your cell? Nobody talks like that. Nobody talks like that.
No. Nicolas Cage talks like that.
Okay, Kyle, what about you? Con Air or The Rock?
Okay, I'm gonna say this. I think The Rock is the better story, but Con Air is much more fun. Con Air is the more fun of the two.
You know
films.
What makes, in my opinion, it's Con Air. You know what makes Con Air better? It's got a better cast. It's got better characters.
Yeah, but I will
something
say this.
Something that Matt said rang true. The reason why I like this is it's a better script, I think.
Yeah, I think that it's you don't want to go against Sean Connery. More than anything with The Rock, is it? You're just scared that Sean Connery is going to come after you.
He's the only thing that makes sense.
Okay, before we get into our favorite scenes, I did write something down that I did want to talk about because one thing that this film is famous for, and it's always brought up when we talk about the best mullets of all time.
This is Nicolas Cage's best mullet.
So okay, of course, but I want to ask Matt, of all of the movies that you've seen, where does Nicolas Cage's mullet put in, like, the Hall of Fame of mullets?
It's up there. It's up there. Are we comparing to other mullets?
Yeah, bring it.
Ooh, wow. Okay, so let's
stick to, like, action movies and maybe television, you know?
Okay, Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse.
Oh, good one. Good one.
Okay, MacGyver in MacGyver.
Oh, very okay. good. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. What else? I'm drawing a blank. Those are the two that stand out most to me.
My two favorites are this one with Nicolas Cage and Van Damme in Hard Target. What about you?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Van Damme with Hard Target is probably number one.
Because it's always wet, you know? Yeah.
But wait a minute. Doesn't your lovely fiance, the lovely Erin Gill, disagree with you about Hard Target being a mullet?
Yes, she does, and she's wrong. I can say that because she's not here right now.
Yeah. What is it then?
I don't know. She doesn't. She thinks that it's just kind of combed back. I'm like, nah, that's a mullet, girl.
That's a mullet. Mullet.
It's all party in the back.
That's a mullet.
For the record, her favorite mullet is Kiefer Sutherland in The Lost Boys, and that is an excellent mullet. So.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get into our favorite scenes in the film. Matt, what were some of your favorite scenes in Con Air?
Oh my God. Jeez. My favorite scenes. Okay. Oh, sorry.
You too, okay. Kyle. When you're talking, get close to the mic.
All right. The beginning. That solidifies what you're going to get into.
Do you mean when they're boarding the plane?
When they're introducing the criminals, he says, well, fellas, I told you this was going to be an all-star flight.
Yes.
And he starts listing everybody. Oh my God. I mean, that's kind of what makes
what's
it. That's
funny what about that too, is that you don't get Garland Green's introduction until you get to Carson City.
Dude, Hannibal Lecter didn't have an introduction like that. I mean, my God, two locks at the same time, the chair in the padded truck going forward, and then the sticks
guide him into the plane.
My God.
Did you have any other favorite scenes?
Too many to count.
There's a lot.
I mean, just any scene
the
with
the boneyard John fight scene in Carson's pretty good.
Yeah, any scene
or is
with
it
John
Lerner?
Malkovich.
Lerner Airport. Yeah,
when we're kind of jumping the gun, but when he gets to Santiago, I think was his name.
Yeah.
Santiago, the drug dealer, and he crashes the plane and gets out and is, oh, we were coming for you. And John Malkovich takes his cigarette out of Swamp Thing's mouth. Sayonara.
Yeah. Kyle, what about you? What are some of your favorite scenes?
I love the beginning when you have him writing letters to his daughter at the beginning of the film. And he's writing and there's this prison riot going on around him. And here he is just writing a letter to his daughter. And so I love that scene. The scene where they introduce them all is still absolutely classic and probably the highlight scene of this film. But I also love it when Larkin attaches the car to the plane.
Yes. What? I think it accidentally gets caught to the car, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it gets caught to the car, but then he's like, because then you have Cole Meany's character going, you better not do anything to my car, his car's for enjoy, and then it gets wiped out. Another great scene, too, is when they think Cole Meany's got him tracked, and he thinks he's got him, and it turns out it's some, like, tourist helicopter.
Yeah, yeah, tourist plane, yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. It's very cheesy, it's very, I'm the action hero moment, but I like it when Cameron Poe goes, I'm going to show you there is a God. And he starts storming the plane, beating up guys. He gets shot in the arm. But then when he gets up to Sally Can't Dance, instead of punching him, he slaps her.
I will say this movie has a highly creepy scene in it as well. And that is when you have Steve Buscemi's character talking to the little girl.
Yeah,
that whole scene is just high on the creepiness.
Especially when you didn't quite know what was going to happen, you know. You didn't know if he was going to, you know, go back to his old ways and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Well, and I'm sitting here questioning, why is this little girl out in this, middle of nowhere desert house?
It's a trailer park.
Yeah, it was like a trailer park house out there, yeah. Okay, let's get to some of our favorite quotes, guys. And Kyle, I want to start with you.
Well, no, Matt is here.
Okay.
He's got to say this first quote we've got on
all right,
the screen.
All right.
Okay. Put the bunny back in the box.
Nice.
This is just high quality here. There's so many great quotes in this film. It's just this is Aliens quotability as far as this film goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really is. One of my favorites is Garland Green though. Define irony. Bunch of idiots dancing on a plane to a song made famous by a band that died in a plane crash.
Yeah, Sweet Home Alabama. I like, it's kind of subtle, but I like when Johnny 23 goes to Cameron, goes, do you know who I am? And Cameron goes, ugly all day.
And I love it too with Cyrus, make a move and the bunny gets it.
And I like when he's talking to Johnny 23 and he goes, I despise rapists. For me, they're somewhere between a cockroach and that white stuff that accumulates at the corner of your mouth when you're really thirsty. But in your case, I'll make an exception.
Oh, can I?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. Have you lost your mind? According to my last psych evaluation, yes.
You know what I am? Ugly all day.
There's some great quotes in this, but I think the quote of the movie is put the bunny back in the box. Definitely.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Well, as we mentioned, this is Simon West's film. He directed this. I wasn't very familiar with what his stuff was. Some people actually think that this is a Michael Bay film. They forget that it's not because they get it confused with The Rock. Simon also directed Laura Croft, Tomb Raider, The General's Daughter, The Mechanic, with Jason Statham. He's done quite a bit, a few things.
Expendables 2.
Yep. Expendables 2. He's done a lot of stuff, a lot of television as well.
Time out. He directed Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up.
Oh my God. He's a legend.
Jesus.
Oh my God. Okay.
I think we just got Rick rolled, gentlemen, in the most epic way.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Never Gonna Give You. Oh my God. Wow. I've now acquired an instant man crush on Simon West right now. This is fantastic.
Well, we're no strangers to love.
All right, guys, let's talk about the cast here. Nicolas Cage, of course, the big star, Cameron Poe. Cole Meany is Duncan Malloy. Michael T. Williamson is Baby-O. Nick Chinlin is Belly Bedlam. John Malkovich, of course, is Malkovich is Cyrus the Virus. Ving Rhames is Diamond Dog. Dave Chappelle is Pinball. Rachel Ticketon is Guard Sally Bishop, probably in her second biggest role, maybe next to Total Recall.
Yeah, I would think so.
And, of course, we've got Steve Buscemi as Garland Green. Danny Trejo is Johnny 23. MC Gainey is Swamp Thing. And, of course, we've got John Cusack as Vince Larkin and Monica Potter's Trisha Poe. Let's start with you, Matt. Tell me about the cast. Some of your favorites here.
Oh, dude. John Malkovich. I mean, he just... Every scene he's in, he just chews it up. I love it, love it. Ving Rhames. I mean, it's Diamond Dog. He's just awesome. Yeehaw! Something on your mind, hillbilly? And my God, Dave Chappelle. Dave Chappelle in this movie. I mean, not enough Dave Chappelle, in my opinion.
This is kind of early in his career.
So yeah, this is before Dave Chappelle became Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, I mean, arsonist, dope fiend, hell of a guy. He just got caught.
What about you, Kyle?
Well, first of all, you've got to echo Matt's sentiments when it comes to John Malkovich. He is just prime time. He's like, why am I doing this movie? Well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to just have as much fun as possible. And you could tell because he chewed up everybody in this film. I loved Cole Meany in this film. Obviously, coming from his Star Trek days, just portraying that royal a-hole that we all just want to slap around because he's such a jerk. I actually like John Cusack a lot in this movie as well.
Yeah, I do too. He's great in this film.
There's just something really... This is one of his more likable roles. But, I mean, it's just such an oddball casting for all of these convicts, and it works perfectly. Even Sally Can't Dance, played by Manali Santiago, I remember him from Hackers.
Yeah.
So... Mm-hmm. No way, Jose!
Yeah, I'm going to echo what you guys are saying here. I want to ask you guys, though, regarding John Malkovich. A lot of people will say his best role might have been in Line of Fire. To me, he's got more charisma in this. This, honestly, is my favorite Malkovich film, and I think it's his best.
Ditto.
What do you think, Matt?
Ditto.
Yeah. What about
Hands
Kyle?
Hands down.
I think it's one of his top two roles for sure.
What else are you putting up there?
He is very good in the Line of Fire. I mean, he is evil in the Line of Fire.
Who's more evil, though? This one or this one?
This one is more blatantly evil. Like, he's not afraid to show it at all. Malkovich is just such a chameleon of an actor, too.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
But, I mean, in this one, you could just tell I think he was just like, this is insane, but I'm going to enjoy every minute of it.
All right, let's talk about Nicolas Cage here, because my two favorite Nicolas Cage films are this one, and I love him in Face Off.
Yeah.
What about you, Matt?
I'd be inclined to agree with you. Yeah, yeah, definitely. This one and Face Off are my favorites.
What about you, Kyle?
I'm right there with you. I think I love him in this. I love him in Face Off. He has I think one of his more underrated crazy Nicolas Cage roles, though, is Rick Santoro in Snake Eyes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do remember that.
And,
yeah.
And I actually really did like him as Memphis Reigns in Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yep, he was good in that, too. But he was like a bona fide action star when this film came out, I think. You know, because he wasn't really the action star in The Rock, but this one, I mean, he was buffed for it. He looked good. I mean, he just, I think this was probably right there at the top for him for that. So
yeah, he was on a run real quick on this, Kevin. I just want to go through this. I'm going to start with 95. Kiss of Death, Leaving Las Vegas, The Rock, Con Air, Face Off, City of Angels, Snake Eyes, 8mm, Bringing Out Your Dead, and Gone in 60 Seconds, all from 95 to 2000.
He was a busy actor. Busy actor. Of course, he seems busier now because he seems to go and direct to video almost every week now.
he's got Sam Jackson disease.
All right, so we got a running time of the theatrical version of this at 115 minutes, but there's the extended version at 123 minutes. It was released on June 6, 1997 with a rating of R. Budget was $75 million. Opening weekend in the U.S. was just over $24 million. Grossed over $101 million in the U.S. Worldwide was $224 million. This was a bona fide hit. Released, of course, by Touchstone Pictures, produced by Jerry Bruckheimer Films. Let's get into some reviews and critical responses here. The film holds... Now, this surprised me. I know it's Rotten Tomatoes, but sometimes they get stuff right. Not this one, though. They gave it a 55% approval rating up there.
Ew.
Exactly. Consensus reads, Con Air won't win any awards for believability, and all involved seem cheerfully aware of it, making some of the blockbuster action outgoing's biggest flaws fairly easy to forgive.
You know, they're actually, okay, let's be honest. There is a little bit of truth in that statement, but that's the point of this movie.
Yes.
That's exactly.
They're missing
the point. That's the point.
Let's go to our favorite Roger Ebert here, reviewing the film for the Chicago Sun-Times. Awarded it 3 out of 4 stars, saying it moves smoothly with visual style and verbal wit. I would agree with that. That was good.
Yeah, absolutely.
He got one right there. Janet Maslin, reviewer for New York Times, considered Con Air an exemplar of thrill ride genre. In contrast, Rolling Stone reviewer Peter Travers described the flip, hip, and ultimately depressing and pandering present in the treatment. Okay. Andrew Johnson, reviewer of Time Out New York, saying, leaving The Rock last summer, I thought it seemed physically impossible for a more over-the-top action movie to be made. That was pretty short-sighted of me, since it was only a matter of time until Jerry Bruckheimer topped himself, as he did with the wildly entertaining Con Air. Video release, unrated extended edition of the film, was released on DVD on May 15th, 2006. Jason Morgan of CinemaBlend gave the film 1 star out of 5, claiming the added scenes slowed down the film, and criticized the high price for the DVD for its lack of bonus content. The theatrical version was released on Blu-ray January 8th, 2008. What did you guys think of this? I think the versions we have now include the extra scenes in them. Did you get that at all with the extra scenes seeming cumbersome at all? What do you think, Kyle?
You know, it's been a while since I've watched those extra scenes, but I don't remember them seeing cumbersome. But, you know, that's one of the things I will say about this original theatrical cut. It flows perfectly. And yeah. I think sometimes this is one of those movies where the extra scenes probably didn't add anything to it. So it was just there to have extra scenes.
Right, right. Yeah. There's many different versions in the UK, and of course there was television edited versions that had some also other scenes in there as well. But let's talk about the soundtrack here for a second. Okay, so this is what's interesting. The film featured the Diane Warren penned Leanne Rimes hit "How Do I Live," performed by Trisha Yearwood for the film, but it was originally recorded by Leanne Rimes, and she was like 15 years old. Interesting, though, that they went with the Trisha Yearwood version. And I've heard both. What do you think about this, Matt?
I prefer the version that's in the film.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot. What about you, Kyle?
I like both versions. I can't go wrong with either version. But I think part of this was because of Leanne Rimes' age and this being an R-rated film and stuff they put in the video. That's maybe why they went with Trisha Yearwood.
Probably, yep. definitely. And of course, includes the huge hit "Sweet Home Alabama" in that memorable scene. And of course, it's got. But I, you know what? I got to tell you, the the score for this film really stands out, especially especially like during the boneyard scene and that dum 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 and all this other stuff going on. It's it is actually an excellent soundtrack. What do you think, Matt?
Oh, dude! I mean, in the boneyard when anytime that it plays, but. Like you said, in the Boneyard, when Nicolas Cage, when Cameron Poe gets in there, he says, okay, let's do this. And then the guitar thing goes up. I'm just like, yeah. Anytime that guitar thing comes in, it's just like, it gets you going. I mean, on on YouTube, there's this video that's goes around that says Nicolas Cage has awesome hair. And it's just the scene of him getting off the bus with the wind blowing. Through his hair.
Through his mullet,
and the Con Air theme playing in the background. And it's just... and just Nicolas Cage with his hair blowing.
The soundtrack albums by Trevor Rabin and Mark Mancina. Kyle, what say you about the soundtrack?
Now, this is one of those ones where the soundtrack perfectly matches the film. It doesn't go wrong at any place. And it brings the perfect energy complementing what's going on with the film.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. Let's talk about production here. The C-123 used for taxi scenes at the Wendover Airport with the second unit working on it began at Salt Lake City. Now, while most of the interiors of this airplane were filmed in Hollywood Center Studio soundstage, Wendover Airport in Utah is the stand-in for the fictional Lerner Airfield, was used for the C-123 flying and the taxi scene. Director Simon West chose the barren, remote Wendover area because it looked like the surface of the moon. My idea that it was a perfect for the convicts who had been locked up for 10, 20, 30 years in little cells. The old wartime bomber base also was used for the aircraft boneyard scenes, while the original swimming pool at the base was used in a scene where Garland Green was talking to the young girl. This is interesting. In August 29, 1996, Philip Swartz, a welder employed by Special Effects Unlimited, a Los Angeles-based firm, was crushed to death at Wendover when a static model of the C-123 used in the film fell on him. The film credits end with In Memory of Phil Schwartz. After filming, the filmmakers donated the Jailbird movie model used for the taxi scenes to the historic Wendover Airfield Foundation, where it is currently on a display at the ramp for attractions and visitors. Other filming locations include the Ogden Airport, with the exchange of prisoners as seen, the scene where the aircraft's left wing hits the Fender Stratocaster sign of the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, the place where it premiered was held, was filmed using a remodeled guitar of the hotel and a Jailbird miniature model. The crash site was filmed in the Sands Hotel before its demolition on November 26, 1996, which is one of the reasons why they chose that location, because they found out that the Sands was going to be demolished, so they decided to use that in the scene as well. Nice. Producer Jerry Bruckheimer found the right spot for the climactic finale, originally planned for a crash at the White House. But Las Vegas was more in keeping with the dichotomy of convicts cashing in. We got very lucky. The Sands was going demolished anyway. We blew up the tower on their own. We arranged to blow up the front of the building. The Second Street Tunnel in Los Angeles was also used for the tunnel chase scene near the end of the film, which I thought was really weird why they crashed in Las Vegas. But then all of a sudden there's this like truck, car, motorcycle chase through a tunnel, which doesn't really exist in Las Vegas, so I always thought that was kind of weird. Now, here's an interesting thing. Crash site of the C-123 from Con Air, Mount Healy, Denali National Park, Alaska, the Jailbird movie model used during flight scenes of the film, had a series of both military and private owners. In December 2003, it was sold to Al West Freight Incorporated in Delta Junction, Alaska. On August 1st, 2010, the C-123 was destroyed when it crashed into Mount Healy within the Denali National Park in Alaska. The three-member flight crew was killed in the crash. So unfortunately, the plane had a bad ending, yeah. Kyle, in Alaska.
I speak from experience of knowing that area. You do not want to crash in that area. That is not a fun place.
Probably hard to get to. All right, we got some trivia and some other fun stuff coming up. But first, we have our fantastic FPNet promo. We're going to take a quick break and let you know what other great podcasts are here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to our other awesome shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast. For you movie fans, we have Couch Potato Theater, where we celebrate our favorite cult classic and guilty pleasure movies. We also have Time Warp. That's our fandom flashback show, where we like to look back on our favorite fandoms. For you NFL fans, we have the End Zone podcast. And of course, for you Alfred Hitchcock fans, please check out Good Evening. For you Star Trek and Orville fans, we also have the Union Federation podcast. And for you hard rock metal fans, we have Hair Metal, the 1980s rock metal podcast. Doctor Who fans, we've got one for you as well. We have Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. If you're a fan of 1980s action films, please check out Lethal Mullet. And our newest show, we have a Star Wars podcast called What a Piece of Junk. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The FPNet can also be found on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network can also be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Please search on Facebook for Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom. All right, we got some trivia for you here. I thought we'd take some turns. Kyle, you and I can go back and forth here. I'll do the first two here. Body count was 43, in case you were checking up on things. As we teased earlier, the Las Vegas scenes were filmed at the legendary Sands Hotel immediately prior to its demolition in late 1996. When the production team heard about the city's intention to raise the historic landmark, they immediately scheduled a multiple camera setup to take advantage of the rare event, which is what you actually see in the movie.
Very cool. John Cusack allegedly dislikes this film so much that he refuses to be interviewed about it.
What? I want to talk about this real quick. Okay.
What?
As far as I know, people like this film. Did it get any bad press, like, soon after it was released? Like, was it not to be cool? I mean, why do you think he doesn't like it?
I think when Cusack's case, I think he had some bad experiences while making this movie. And, you know, Cusack was kind of the oddball actor in this movie, really, that probably truly didn't fit in with the rest of that.
But he was really good in it, right, Matt? I thought so.
Yeah, he was really good in it. That doesn't make any sense to me.
You think maybe it was because he was third billing?
No, I don't know. I kind of remember that for a while, it really wasn't cool to like Con Air, Demolition Man, these kind
when?
Of... I think it was like maybe about 5 years afterward, because the movie scene was kind of changing. Okay. And I'm guessing probably he just didn't want to be associated with it because he felt that it was kind of a bad connotation. Maybe after watching it, he thought it was silly and he didn't quite get it, maybe. I don't know. What do you think, Kyle?
I don't know. This man, coming from the man who made 2012...
Yeah, and what was the other one? The film adaptation for Cell?
Yeah.
Or Hot Tub Time Machine?
Hey, I will defend Hot Tub Time Machine.
I'm just saying, as far as the ridiculousness of the film premise.
Yeah, you'd think he would not want to talk about Hot Tub Time Machine instead of this classic action gem.
That just seems bizarre to me.
It does. The song How Do I Live was nominated for both an Oscar and Best Original Song and a Razzie as Worst Original Song. It did not win either award. The theme song How Do I Live was originally performed by, 14-year-old Leanne Rimes. Yeah. Kyle, you know, we actually brought this up with a Time Warp episode that we did talking about soundtracks, our best soundtracks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was a discussion, and Matt, I don't know if you remember listening to this or not, of how some songs kind of outlive the movie in its popularity. And there was a discussion, and Aaron was saying that How Do I Live was more popular than the movie itself, Con Air. And I was like, no.
Here's what I think is that I think initially How Do I Live was more popular than Con Air, but over time Con Air has caught up and surpassed it.
Yeah, and I think they're very symbiotic. They work well together. I think they complement each other. So, yeah. All right, Kyle.
So According to Danny Trejo, there was a lot of tough guy competition in almost everything on the set. For example, when one guy would spit on the floor, the others would immediately imitate it and try to spit even farther. You got to imagine the testosterone levels on this film set were off the charts.
lots of testosterone.
Cole Meany's keychain has a Star Trek communicator ornament on it. He plays Chief Miles O'Brien on Star Trek Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. I never noticed that. Did you guys notice that?
No, I'm going to have to go back and watch it just to look for that.
Yeah.
It was released in June 1997, the same month as Nicolas Cage's other action hit, Face Off, which came out a few weeks later. The films were shot consecutively from the summer of 1996 to early 1997, with the two productions nearly overlapping at one point.
So that means
a hardworking man.
That means Nick had to like keep close contact with that mullet and just put it on. Is that the way that worked?
I'm going to guess so.
Willem Dafoe and Mickey Rourke auditioned for the part of Cyrus. During Rourke's audition, he improvised by producing a razor-sharp Bowie knife, both terrifying and impressing the director. Though suitably impressed, they decided to cast John Malkovich instead. Matt, do you think Willem Dafoe or Mickey Rourke could have pulled this off?
I could definitely see Dafoe pulling this off. I mean, what was it? Speed 2, right? Where he played the antagonist in Speed 2,
yeah.
I think. And he, I mean, totally do the crazy eyes and all that, maybe shave his head.
Yeah, he could.
I totally think he could.
What do you think, Kyle?
Well, first of all, the Mickey Rourke thing just goes to show you never cast an actor who you're afraid could actually kill you.
Very true.
I think with Willem Dafoe, he could pull it off, but it would have been a totally different direction for the character than how John Malkovich played it.
True.
Because I don't think Willem Dafoe would have pulled off that completely insane over the top, like, and just kind of camming it up a little bit like John Malkovich did in this film.
Fair enough.
Who's next? Is that you next, Kyle?
Yeah. Don Simpson reportedly hated the film's concept, which when he and Jerry Bruckheimer ended their longtime producing partnership, Simpson was happy to relinquish any ties to the film. When Bruckheimer got the green light from BB to begin filming for a summer 1997 release, this film was not affected by Simpson's death in January 1996.
Why does this film get so much hate? It doesn't deserve it at all.
I agree. Now, Simpson, Bruckheimer, they, of course, were famous producing partners. And they got on the map a lot with Top Gun, of course. And also they did a lot of drugs. And I remember I thought that their producing partnership stopped because Dom Simpson passed away. But apparently their relationship stopped before that happened. So I found that interesting. Here's some more casting could have been. Robert Downey Jr., Charlie Sheen, and Matthew Broderick were considered for the part of Vince Larkin. Matt, do you think any of these guys could have pulled off Vince Larkin?
Oh, okay. Just Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Charlie Sheen, maybe during his sober days. Matthew Broderick, hell no. No. 1,000 times no.
I think Charlie Sheen was in the office with Don Simpson many times.
Yeah. No.
Kyle, what
Guess
about
what?
You?
No.
Who do you think of these three?
You know what? Truthfully, I can't really see either of them. One, Charlie Sheen, just no. Matthew Broderick, I think, would brought that kind of dryness that Larkin had, but it still had some flavor to it. I think Robert Downey Jr. would have ended up being too big and overshadowing some of the cons in this. But really, I just think they had the perfect casting for Larkin as it was. So even though he hates the movie. Now, I love this.
Oh, my God.
Kid Rock based American Badass on Cameron Poe.
Oh, my God. I'm disgusted and fascinated at the same time.
All right, we got one more trivia here. The events of the movie take place on July 14th, which is mentioned several times in the letter from Casey to her father, Cameron. July 14th is the date of a famous and historical significant prison break. The French Revolution started on July 14th, 1789, when the people of Paris stormed the fortress prison known as Bastille. The Bastille was where people, particularly political prisoners, were imprisoned, simply based on arbitrary and or malicious royal edicts. that could not be appealed and did not specify the crime or reason of their incarceration. The prisoners were freed, although there were only seven at the time. The day is still celebrated in France and other countries as Bastille Day. We got some accolades here. Con Air was nominated for Best Original Song, How Do I Live, the Best Sound at the 70th Academy Awards, but both lost to Titanic in both categories. Conversely, the film won the Golden Raspberry Award, Worst Reckless Disregard of Human Life and Public Property, at the 18th Golden Raspberry Awards. I love how the Raspberry Awards kind of come up with these sometimes one-shot categories just to kind of fit something like this, Kyle.
Yeah, I know. It's what the Razzies do.
How Do I Live was nominated for both Academy Award for Best Original Song and Razzie Award for Worst Original Song, but none of them won. Okay, so I want to ask you guys, let's get into some sequel talk here. I don't know if there was ever any sequel talk about these guys. You know, we know Garland Green is seen somewhat escaping. He's at least gambling at the end of the film. Kyle, I want to start with you. If they were to do a sequel of anything from this film, what would you have liked to have seen regarding a sequel?
I think the only thing you can really do with a sequel of this film is maybe something with the Vince Larkin character.
Really?
Yeah, I think you put him in another outrageous kind of situation. But yeah, I mean, because you've got the cons, you killed Cyrus. I don't know if you can bring back Cameron Pro. Maybe you spin that character off into a totally different type of movie. But I think if you're doing something like with Con Air or something like that, you got to use the Vince Larkin character again.
What about you, Matt? If they were to somehow do a sequel to this film, what characters that were still left alive would you bring back?
Ah, jeez. Wow. Definitely Cameron. And it'd have to be Cameron and Vince.
Yeah.
And Colmini's character as well.
That would be entertaining. Even maybe Rachel Ticketon's character could be kind of cool. Mm-hmm. I always thought it'd be kind of interesting if there was some sort of other like prison break or something that, they needed some help with, but I could definitely see Cameron coming back for something. I'm not sure what though.
Well, then again, if you did that, you'd be going into like Die Hard territory, and that hasn't really worked out at all.
True. So. This is very true.
No, Kevin, can I tell you what I really want to see?
Okay, what?
I don't want to see a sequel. I want to see a remake done by Disney Plus, because you know Goofy is one hell of a Garland Green.
Oh, guys, I got it. They could bring back Danny Trejo. They bring back Johnny, 23.
Johnny 23.
Thank you, Johnny 23, and he's got a robot arm. Yeah. Because his arm gets ripped off at the end. So.
Okay, what if... go ahead, Kyle.
I was just going to say, I think Matt's more thinking about he wants the next Machete movie.
Okay.
Fair enough.
What about a remake? Or a TV series reboot? Mm-mm. Matt?
No, not at all. No? Absolutely not.
What about a TV series?
No.
I think if you were going to do something, I think you're better off doing a streaming series on a streaming service that can do a rated R type thing like a Netflix or maybe the upcoming HBO Max or something like that. I think it works better as a TV series because I think what you could do is tell some great... dive more into the other cons and maybe tell their stories a little deeper per episode.
And okay. It shows them escaping on the lam and then them like the feds trying to catch up with them wherever that they are type of thing.
Okay. And they bring in Cameron Poe to lead the task force.
Oh, damn. Wow.
Oh, yeah. I like that.
You guys got it. Sell it.
Yeah, that is good. That is good. Now, I don't think we got any, I know there was a novel, I think, of Con Air that came out. I don't know if there was a lot of different scenes in the novel or not. Not much merchandising. I was disappointed by that. I don't even remember a pinball game. Do you remember a pinball game? Like, Demolition Man had a pinball game.
Yeah, I don't remember anything for Con Air, but, you know, I it's kind of hard to merchandise a movie about a bunch of escaped convicts.
Everything had a pinball machine back in the day, though.
The one thing, too, I want to ask you guys, the one thing that I love about these type of movies that have this huge ensemble cast is in the credits, there are these extended credits where it shows the main stars. They don't just show their name, but they show them in a scene, and they show them like smiling for some odd reason. You know what I'm talking about?
You noticed that too, right?
Yeah.
That was so 80s.
It was 80s so and 90s. I don't think they really, I mean, they did it for Avengers. They kind of, because they had to, because it was such this big thing, but they don't really do that with big ensemble cast anymore, where they kind of show them all smiling and happier scenes and it shows their names. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Top Gun.
Yeah.
Predator.
Yeah. Predator was great all the way.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Where they show them at the end credits and all that. And it's, yeah, love that. I miss that. I wish they'd do that again.
Definitely. What about you, Kyle? What do you think?
Oh, I think that it's always been one of my fun favorite ways to do kind of a trailer in our end credits, with kind of those snapshots where they pull them from a scene or something like that, but they get them in like a really kind of weird moment. Like, you know, they play the scene and they freeze it.
Yep.
And then, so yeah, I've always enjoyed that.
Okay, Matt, put on your thinking cap on this question here.
All right.
If you could add more to this film, maybe more scenes with certain characters or a brand new scene, if there's anything that you would change or add, what would it be? I'm going to go to you with the same question, Kyle.
I could totally deal with a more Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
Just flying and maybe shooting the breeze with one of the cons or something like that.
I kind of want to see a flashback of Billy Bedlam going four towns over to kill his girlfriend's family or whatever.
God,
I don't know why.
No,
Kyle, what about you? What would you change or add if you could get more scenes of?
I wish they would have had a high quality scene between Garland Green and the virus.
Yeah. Like how? Really? What would you say?
Like just the virus maybe trying to get him to do something.
Right.
With his ego, and just Garland Green just kind of, because nobody really even talked to Garland Green or messed with him except for Cameron.
Right.
And
right.
So I would have loved to have seen, you know, like the virus maybe trying to challenge Garland Green and something happening, or Garland Green just saying something and, you know, just kind of the virus kind of just walking away. Really see just how crazy Garland Green was in that. I come across the same, but I'm really quite insane.
Right. I would have liked to have seen more flashbacks in prison that cemented the relationship between Cameron Poe and Baby-O, Michael T. Williams thing, of why he felt he needed to stay on the plane to protect him. And also, I don't remember why Michael T. Williams was in prison in the first place. Do you guys remember?
I want to say it was because he killed a family member or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, accidentally. What is it about Baby-O's character that Cameron was able to bond to, and how they helped each other out?
I think there are probably two guys who really were in there, but not because of things that necessarily they did intentionally,
like involuntary manslaughter for both. Yeah.
I think it was. They were by having him stay on the plane, they were trying to prove just what a good guy Cameron Poe was and this protector he was and things like that.
Yeah, I think a little more more scenes in the background of that too. But it would have been nice to have gotten a flashback for each character, you know, when they were kind of committing their crimes to get. I mean, obviously you have to kind of take the word for it, and there's a lot of mystery behind it. But getting some visuals behind that, it would have been great. Okay. Matt, is there any of these convicts that you think that if the movie didn't include, it wouldn't have hurt the film?
Oh, wow. I mean, you know, honestly, I wasn't a big fan of, even though he's got a big part, Billy Bedlam.
Yeah.
Kind of a throwaway guy, to be honest with you, even though just to be the antagonist to Cameron and
question whether or not he's telling the truth. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And to just not put the bunny back in the box.
What about you, Kyle? Is there anyone here that you think that they could have been without?
You probably could take Sally Can't Dance out of this movie.
No, no, absolutely not.
Matt will scratch your eyes out.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. I there's, you know, the one guy, and I'm trying to, after watching it again, you know, the officer that went undercover onto the plane.
Mm. And the one who made the mess of things in the first place.
Yeah. I was kind of like, did you really need that guy in there? I don't know. That was just kind of put in there to show that, you know, you can't really mess with these cons and stuff.
Okay. I got a question for both of you. Cole Meany's character. What fast food place is he working at after this film? What ice station up in Alaska is he assigned to?
yeah, you kind of effed that up for sure. Okay, let's wrap things up here. I want to get Kyle, start with you. What's your personal reflection of this movie now?
This movie is the true definition of a couch potato theater film. This film is fun, and it's one of those movies, no matter where you jump into it, you're going to stop and you're going to watch it. This is one of those movies that is still today in the high rotation on cable on one channel or another. Usually once a year, it makes a pretty good 2 to 3 month run on TNT or TBS. USA Network will hit it a few times, or Sci-Fi Channel even will run it a few times. This is one of those movies that's just never going to go away, because it's always going to be airing somewhere, because even in the edited cut down for TV version and stuff like that, it's still just insanely fun.
It is.
That's what makes this movie so great. I mean, to me, this is one of those ones that you put on, you kick back, and you know, I'm just going to enjoy myself for the next 2 hours and just be along for the ride. Watch Nick Cage be prime time Nick Cage. Watch the craziness of all these cons and just enjoy the action and enjoy the crazy dialogue and just go with it.
Matt, where does this movie stand for you?
I mean, everything you just said, Kyle. I mean, it's just the epitome of 90s action fun. And like I've said before, this is the kind of action movie that Michael Bay wishes he could do. All the explosions, all the action, the larger-than-life characters, all of it without the stupid dialogue and product placement. I mean, the characters are iconic. The music is glorious. Bear now! And just, you can't get enough.
Okay, Kevin, real quick. I think what we need to do one day is, when we eventually start live podcasting, you know, live video and stuff, we just need to leave Matt on our YouTube, on a YouTube channel for 24 hours and just say, you got 24 hours straight to get all the Michael Bay out of your system.
Matt, I want to ask you, because I know you've posted whenever you're watching this film, and I love it. Where does Con Air, if you were to rate, like, let's just say top 10 action movies of all time, does
man,
it fly
don't
in there,
do that.
Or where does it rate in that kind of era for you?
Wow. Oh, God. It's definitely in my top 10 list. It's not... Boy, you put me on the spot there. But, you know, I'm biased to my action movies and all that, but
what are some of your other favorites in, as you would put it
like
up there?
Aliens, yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. The Raid.
Ooh, good.
Yeah. But this would definitely be in my top 10, maybe 5. I'd have to give it some thought.
Okay, very cool. What about you, Kyle? Where does this stand in like your top 10 action movies? Does it make it in the top 10?
It's probably right there at if not at 9 or 10, right at that 11, 12 mark. I can think of, you know, Matt talked about Aliens and The Raid. Predator's got to be up there.
Fury Road.
Yeah, good. Fury Road is going to be way up there. I'm a big fan of The Last Boy Scout.
Mm, yes.
Die Hard.
Yeah, the original Die Hard. Yeah, there you go.
Last Boy Scout and Last Man Standing double feature with Bruce Willis.
And let's not forget, if you're talking action movies, Kevin, you just started starting a rewatch of those films, but Fast Five.
Yeah, Fast Five is so good. Yeah, I for me, I think Con Air is definitely in the top 10, maybe towards the lower part, because there's a lot of competition up there, especially recently, movies like John Wick, you know.
Yeah.
But I would agree with you, Matt. When you said Aliens, that's up there in the top 5 for me. It's one of the best there. And good call on the latest Mad Max film. That was so good. Yeah. Yeah, this is, as Matt, you said, this is one of the best 90s action films for sure. And it kind of defined that decade to a certain degree of that style of action that they were doing. So, all right, guys, well, let's wrap this up. Is there anything else you want to say about Con Air? Start with you, Kyle.
Just if for whatever reason you have not seen this movie, go see this movie. It's, you can find it cheap on Blu-ray or on digital formats. This is, if nothing else, this movie is one of the epitome films for the 1990s of action movies. This really is a game definer for that decade of action films, without a doubt. Go see Con Air, and you know, you might even find out you're rooting for the bad guys.
Matt, I'm going to ask you to give your final thoughts here, but if you had the option to see Con Air in the theater, would you go?
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely. I mean, it's just, like you guys said, it's just fun and awesome. And it's got an iconic cast, iconic characters, and just, you have a blast. And it's just the epitome of 90s action. Oh, nothing made me sadder when the agent lost his bladder on the airplane.
Help! Help!
And that's where we're going to end it. I'd like to thank... I'm Kevin Garland Green, the Marietta Mangler. I'd like to thank my guest, Kyle the Virus Wagner. Kyle, thank you very much.
It's always about the virus. Just remember that.
And Matt Diamond Dog Clifton.
Yeah! Something on your mind, hillbilly?
Love it. Love it. Until next time, we will see you on the Con Air and on the couch. Thank you and goodbye.